On this episode, John Legend stops by.
This is the Gary V Audio Experience.
Hey everybody, it's Gary Bay, Nurchuk, and this is episode 250 of the Ask Gary V Show. Super excited, 250, nice round number. Makes sense to have superstar John Legend in the house. D-Rock, you're excited.
I am.
Very excited. Souza, thanks for making this happen, John.
How are you, sir?
It's a pleasure, man.
Good to see you.
Why don't you say to the zero people who don't know who you are right now a little bit of who you are and what you're up to. We'll get into some call-in and we'll jam a little bit.
I'm just a kid from Ohio. I like to make music. I have a wonderful wife named Chrissy Teigen. My daughter's name is Luna. And I make music and other art for a living. So that's pretty much what I do.
I love the humble answer. I know how you roll. John, before we get into the calls and Facebook, where's Facebook? Right there. Facebook, please put your phone number. Let's go with music or entrepreneur or art questions for John and I. Please put your phone number. We'll be calling you in a second and you'll have a chance to talk to the legend. John, because I know a little bit of your backstory and I think a lot of people do, I think so many people have been watching. I've been spending a lot of time with emerging artists, hip hop, all forms of music over the last year or so on my platform. One of the biggest reasons, and we talked about this, we were just jamming a little bit with our friend Robert Souza, like Chance and others, direct to consumer.
Yep.
You came up during a different era.
Yeah, I came up in the era when people needed a record deal.
How to get discovered.
To get discovered. They needed a lot of investment early on, not just in recording costs, but in marketing costs, and physical products had to be made to sell to people. And obviously things have changed quite a bit now. Very few people actually will buy a CD anymore. Very few people buy vinyl anymore. And people are getting the music digitally and they're streaming and there's a lot less need for record labels now. So you see with artists like Chance and Frank Ocean and other artists, people choosing to circumvent the label and go straight to the consumer.
How does a guy like you that sits at the tippy top of the game, you really won. You're in a difference, right? An aspiring entrepreneur, musician says, okay, that's gonna be my path. I've gotten to know you a little bit. Actually, I think this is a fun fact. We're in a building here, we just moved in. Mm-hmm. Boston Consulting Group is in this building.
Yes.
This is what you were doing.
My first job out of college was at Boston Consulting.
For the people, a lot of people know who you are, but I'm not sure a lot of people understand like kind of the skills you have outside of your music career. You're a smart dude, you had a great academic career, which gives you the opportunity to work at a BCG. I know that you're smart and savvy and business-like, not just the artist. How do you think about the changing landscape where you have golden handcuffs by compare, right? I mean, that's a way to look at it. I mean, you have real economics, whereas when you're starting from zero, going direct to Instagram or Musical.ly, sure, or uploading on SoundCloud or Spotify is the only option, the natural option. You're in a very different small group of people looking at the landscape change.
Well, having success and having an audience is always gonna give you power. So,
yes.
Having an audience of, you know, almost 10 million followers on Twitter and, you know, 6 or 7 million followers on Instagram, that gives you an opportunity to say no to whatever you want to say no to and say yes to what you want to say yes to. And we all have choices. And many of us are still signed to record labels because the record labels made us enough of an offer to buy out
the bank.
Yeah. So they gave us enough money for us to say, well, it's worth staying in with the record labels, and they do have some expertise and some scale when it comes to marketing and some of the other things that they do, that it still makes it beneficial for us to work with them. And then you combine that with the fact that they buy us out and give us a good advance, and we say, well, here's the economics of doing this one way or doing it the other way. And a lot of us have chosen to stay with the record labels because of
and to give you guys context, a lot of you talk about self-publishing. I was a free agent 6-7 months ago. I know, D-Rock, you saw a lot of this negotiation that we never showed, but HarperCollins was able to do the same with me in the book, right?
Yeah.
They made it economically interesting that I decided not to self-publish just yet.
Yeah.
And I think those big companies will continue to have that option. I think they're gonna have to make the deal sweeter and sweeter for the people that sit at the top,
exactly,
of their craft.
So we have a choice and they have to offer us enough value in whatever deal we do with them for us to take our independence off the table, or for us to at least share some of the independence. And so they're making that offer, and then we decide whether it's worth it.
Hello?
Michael, it's Gary Vaynerchuk, and you're on the Ask Gary V Show with John Legend.
What's up, man?
Oh,
my God. Oh my God.
You did it.
Gary.
Yes.
I love you, dude.
I love you back.
My name is John Legend. This is crazy.
So what's your question?
So I am a rapper. I go by MJX Music. And I've been watching all your podcasts just trying to just understand how to brand myself, how to market myself. But it's so hard to be a rapper today because everyone wants to talk about sex, drugs, girls, whatever it may be. I'm freaking out. This is insane. I'm trying to build a following right now. I've been like following and unfollowing people on Instagram. It hasn't worked out to the best.
Because it's a tactic. Because that's a tactic, right? Like following people and hoping they follow you back and then unfollowing you is just very low common denominator, not bringing any value to anybody. And I'm glad to hear that it's not working because it shouldn't work because it's a shit tactic.
Well, there you go. So to me, the main question is the music. What do you bring into the table as an artist? That makes you special and that's going to make people want to listen, because I think the content really matters as much as any other tactic you're going to use. I think the content matters more.
Michael, I think this is crazy that you called when we had John on, because this is now...
I think it's crazy too.
Let me tell you why though. Let me tell you why. How old are you?
I'm 23.
This is perfect, because I'm 41. John, how old are you?
I'm 38.
Great. So when John first hit my radar a decade ago, or what it feels like, and actually maybe even a little bit longer, actually, it was interesting to me because John came up during a time in music, right, where hip-hop and soul and R&B, actually, I thought he was an anomaly. He came like from a different angle, talked about different things in a different way of singing. It wasn't kind of the sound that I was hearing from, it was throwback for me, mm-hmm. and he popped because he stayed true to himself. You know, it was really interesting about hip hop when I was a kid, my man, was that in the early 90s, into like 90 to 96, there was so much about being hard, like literally rappers made up that they came from tough places because it was the only way to do it. I would tell you that I think you're getting tricked by what's working on Instagram, or you're looking at one or two artists. Your truth, back to John's point, the music, your honesty and your truth is what's gonna work. When Eminem came out, he spoke about, forget about being white, and being from the hood, he spoke about depression, issues with his mom.
Family issues, yeah. It was super authentic, and honesty is what sells rap to me. I'm always connecting more with artists who speak their truth and do it like in a way that's musically dope and in a way that feels like you feel the urgency and a sense of like power and truth coming from them. And if you give us that, then we're gonna like what you do.
Michael,
go ahead. I really appreciate that. Like for me, like when I was in eighth grade, my dad, I'm about to be so vulnerable with you guys right now. When I was in eighth grade, my dad was arrested. I had to sell my house, sell all the cars. When I was 15 years old, I had to get a job and just help pay rent back at home. And I've been trying to use that in my music, and it's so cool because I only have like, I don't know, like a 2,000 followers on Instagram or whatever, but I get a direct message like once or twice a week. Just saying, I'm like, hey man, your music's really inspiring me. And to me, that's crazy because I live in DC and there's so many kids out there that look up to these rappers that are talking about guns, drugs, or whatever. But it's just like, I think you can change the world if you can make music that is inspiring kids to be educated and stop the violence or whatever it may be. So that's my goal with all of this. And John, your music has inspired me so much. All of me, I might have that play at my wedding. I don't even know.
Michael, listen, I think you're barking up the right tree. Here's what I would say. Don't get impatient and don't get frustrated. If you speak your truth, when at 29, you may break through, right? Like, John, talk about your you know, coming.
So my journey was, first of all, I started playing the piano when I was 4 years old. I started singing publicly when I was like 6 or 7. So if you think about it, my career has been over 30 years of performing in front of people. I was doing it at a church, I was doing it at school, and by the time I got to college, I went there at 16, and I was singing an a cappella group, and I was also directing a church choir. And then I wanted to get a record deal at some point. And I wanted that since I was a kid, but I started to see the path when I got to college. And I started making my first demos when I was like 18. I started writing a lot more songs, collaborating with more people, and I thought I was ready to get a record deal then. You know, I had that same exuberance that you have, that you know, I'm great. Why isn't someone signing me yet? And it took me a while to realize that I had to keep working at it, keep getting better, keep writing. And eventually it worked out, but it didn't work out until 2004 when I was 25, going on 26 years old. And so it's a process, and you have to be persistent, and you have to take constructive criticism, and you have to realize that even when people say no, that shouldn't discourage you from keeping going and working.
Did your no's excite you? I mean, everybody's different. The reason I'm asking you that, I love no.
They were
like,
frustrating, but
wasn't it like, was it fuck you, I'm gonna win anyway?
It wasn't an active fuck you. Yep. It was more like I believed I could prove them wrong. Mm-hmm. But it also made me think, well, what do I need to do to improve myself? Because mm-hmm. I think you can't just think you know everything already, mm-hmm. and you're already great at everything already.
For sure.
Especially at your age, like, there's a lot of things you gotta get better at. And if you're getting criticism, maybe some of these people are right. Maybe they're not all right, but maybe some of them are right. And that doesn't mean stop, that means work even harder and get even better.
Michael, for you and everybody who's watching, the key is self-awareness and doing it your way. For me, it was really fuck you. It was. Mm-hmm. It was my way. Yeah. I was talking about selling stuff on the internet in the mid-90s, and it was hard for people to buy in. Other people, it's, okay, I'm gonna prove you wrong, but what did I just hear from you that could build on? I would say one of my weaknesses is I don't take the constructive criticism mm-hmm. and factor it in enough. I'd rather run through the wall and figure it out for myself. But that's because I know me and you know you. And so I would say, Michael, you gotta take different pieces, but patience and knowing yourself are two absolute fundamental formulas for this tough game. Thanks for calling, man.
I love it.
Thank you, brother.
Real quick, Gary, can I ask you one last question?
Go ahead.
So, one thing for John. John, I've never talked to someone like this before in my life, so I'm just gonna throw it out there. If I make a dope track, would you consider singing on it?
Who, me or John?
It's gotta be really dope.
Like the dopest of dope. We're hanging up after
Thanks,
that.
Thanks, Michael.
All right. While Andy's getting the next call, how do you think, I mean, that was very nice of Michael, and obviously that's a Hail Mary, and good for him.
Yeah, why not? It doesn't hurt to ask.
How often are you being asked to sing the hook or like collab? You know, I mean, people that have big deals and are real celebrities, I assume, are in that world. How often is that happening, and how, like, how do you even go about thinking about that?
Well, it doesn't get to me very often.
Got
because I have enough,
a team to
enough people to kind of filter through things. So the chances that it'll get to me are only when it's really serious artists that are, you know, major level, major people.
Have you ever reached out to anybody? You're like, oh my God, I love this up and coming kid. I want to put them on.
Absolutely. Usually it's not, I want to put them on. It's usually, I've already worked with them in some way. Like maybe I've written with them, or they've shown me in some way that they're talented and worth working with. And then I'll say, why don't you work with me on this track? And a lot of times it's more behind the scenes. They're writing, or they're playing guitar, or they're doing this or that. And for me to use to reach out to someone and try to get them as a featured artist on my project, usually they're pretty established already. Because, you know, why?
You're at that place.
Yeah, I'm at that place where you might as well have somebody that not only adds something musically, but also their marketing value.
Yeah, Sharon?
That is powerful.
Yes, this is Sharon.
I don't know if you've noticed, but this is Gary Vee, and you're on the Ask Gary Vee show with John Legend.
Hi, Sharon.
I know. Hi there. I'm so excited.
Where are you calling from?
Everyone's number is scrolling past. I'm like, there's no freaking way. No way.
Your number was picked. Where are you from?
I'm from Chandler, Arizona.
Very nice.
Arizona. I'll be in Phoenix soon.
On tour?
On tour, yeah. Awesome.
You better go to the show.
I know. I'm like, where and when will I have my kids that weekend?
Take them.
Go to
anyway,
JohnLegend.com.
JohnLegend.com. Sharon, so what's your question?
Well, I mean, you're both such like big,
good-looking guys.
Forces. Oh, definitely. Both
Obviously,
of you.
That's what she was saying.
You're both strong forces in your industry. How do you stay humble yet strong? You know, you stay humble. I know you stay humble, but you're such strong forces. How do you balance that, those two aspects? Because they're very opposite. Because some people come off cocky. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
How do you do that? How do you balance that?
Well, I think you have to know what you know and also be aware of what you don't know. And I think part of being smart, part of being savvy, is knowing where you might need someone's help, knowing where you're not the greatest at everything. And if you, if you're confident enough in yourself to ask for help at the right time, it's like the right balance of humility and confidence. Other people have expertise in areas that you don't have them in. Like Gary has expertise in areas that I don't have them in. And if I'm...
And I can't play the piano for shit.
And if I'm confident, and, but also humble enough to say, here's where I could use some help, here's where I could use some advice, I think it's the right combination.
Sharon, I think, you know, I think to John's point, I think when you're ultimately confident, the humility actually comes with it. You know, to me, I think, you know, listen, I think there's also some benefits, and I don't want to speak for John's background, but for me, you know, when you're born with so little in a communist country, when you come here, when I get to watch the just watching how my parents navigated the first decade of America, no complaining, working 24/7, not having a lot of stuff, you know, it's impossible for me to forget where I came from.
Same with me.
And then I would tell you the other thing. And then Sharon, I'll tell you the other thing that's really caught my attention. Presidents, people like Prince and David Bowie, using music references, other athletes, celebrities, business tycoons. You know, you watch them pass away as you get older and you realize, you know, America mourns for a day or two and then the world moves on, right? And and so for some reason, I've got all-time legacy wants and ambitions, but I also recognize, you know, what I actually mean in the grand scheme of things, and that's very humbling as well.
Yeah, that's humbling, and I think, like he said, when you know where you've come from, and I think we're in touch with our background still, and we appreciate the struggle that our parents went through to get us the opportunities that we were able to get, and we don't take those things for granted, and I don't forget about people that grew up in my neighborhood and the type of people that I grew up around when I'm thinking about where I am now, even though I'm in rarefied air in a lot of ways. When I think about my politics, when I think about my philanthropy, I'm always thinking about people that grew up in the neighborhoods where I grew up and trying to make life better for them.
Sharon, I'll tell you one other thing to keep an eye out for, and this is for everybody. I genuinely see, when I see the cockiest or worst versions, I genuinely feel bad for those people because I know it's insecurity.
Yeah.
It's a seed of insecurity.
Yeah.
That's what it is. Like, they're putting up a front because they don't want you to get through. I think of them as cactuses. They put up that facade because if you actually get in there, they're quite weak. And I feel like that has just been very obvious to me. And so, I don't know, that's something else to keep in mind.
Yeah, it's the same with celebrities. It's really the ones that you feel like are having the most trouble with their celebrity are also the ones that kind of put up that arrogant facade.
Makes sense. Thanks, Sharon.
It's hard.
Yeah, have a great day, guys.
You too.
Take care.
So sweet. It is hard, right? And so... talk to me about that transition of rarefied air. As people are going through different versions of that right now, what was the most intriguing, difficult, easiest? What were some of the adjustments of going from a place where nobody knew who you were or was to now you walk down the streets and people are turning and selfie and you obviously have a very famous spouse as well, so that compounds the entire situation?
Sure. It's interesting because when you're trying to make music and then make that music known to people, fame comes with it and you welcome it, especially at first.
Of course.
Because you're like, oh, they know who I am now. That's great. I want them to know who I am.
Yes.
I make music because I want people to hear it and I want people to know who I am. But obviously, there's always some cost that comes with that.
That's right.
So you give up some of your privacy, you give up some of your anonymity. I can't just walk around and enjoy the city like a normal person can.
Do you guys try to do it once in a while and see what happens?
We walked around Soho yesterday.
How'd it go?
There were paparazzi. We got stopped for photos. But it wasn't an unpleasant experience. It was an enjoyable afternoon.
And is New York good for fame? Like, do you feel like, how does New York handle you two walking around?
New York is different because you walk. There's not a lot of cities.
Right. Right.
There's not a lot of cities.
People can grab you.
In America, where you walk.
Right.
Most people drive in, LA or mm-hmm. Denver or,
yep.
Houston. Most people drive. So New York is very different in the sense that you're physically accessible to more people, so you're able to get stopped more. But that's what we love about New York, too. There's that energy. There's that kinetic vibe, that connection that you have with the city, and people used to say, well, New Yorkers, they don't give a fuck about celebrities. They'll just let you go. No.
Not true.
If they know who you are, they want to talk to you.
But the paparazzi is different than it is in LA, right?
It used to be.
It's starting to change?
It's about the same now.
Got it.
Like, we're renting a house right now, and mm-hmm. they're camped outside of our house knowing where we're going to be.
It's tough.
Yep.
Andy?
Yeah.
It's Gary Vaynerchuk, and you're on the Ask Gary V show with John Legend.
Holy shit, what's
up? How you doing, buddy?
Gary V.
What up, man? How are you?
I'm doing awesome. How are you guys?
Really good, Andy. Great. What's your question?
I got a question. So my dream project is called Banjo Earth, and I travel around the world to different countries with a banjo and collaborate with the local folk musicians of each country. So I make a documentary and a CD, and my question is, how do I tap in? I've got a YouTube channel I'm working on. How do I tap into these people who are making TV shows? I want to be like the Anthony Bourdain of the banjo and just make music around the world.
That's
with everybody.
Kind of fun. I like that.
That's cool, man. Where are you from, Andy?
I live in North Carolina.
I love it. So how long?
I just went to China and did one last year. I funded it through Kickstarter, and I want to go to Brazil this fall and do another one.
Couple things, I'll jump in first and then John, you jump in. One thing I wanna make sure you realize is you want the leverage and you want it to come to you. So instead of reaching out to CAA or William Morris or production companies, because of the beauty of YouTube and Instagram and Snapchat and things of that nature, the number one thing you should be doing, it's far more important for you to be DMing people with 1 million followers, 500,000 followers in different cities around the country and going and collaborating with them than it is for you to be hitting up a talent agent or a production company to put you on. So what I would do is create the reality and let it come to you instead of you begging to be that one lucky person that broke through, because that's a much more difficult game. That's a game that John did win, but I just genuinely believe the level of talent and serendipity for that is so extreme in a world where there's other options. So I would tell you, I would spend all my time trying to reach out with people that have audiences either on Instagram or YouTube, reach out to them and say, hey, do you want to collaborate? And you're gonna get one yes for every 987 requests, but that yes matters and you just build on that. And if you have talent and you have a unique story, right? The banjo thing right away we both reacted to.
Yeah.
I would tell you strategically, don't think about becoming Anthony Bourdain. Think about the next Anthony Bourdain is gonna be a food person from Instagram, not somebody that looked like Anthony Bourdain.
Yeah, I think you have the power because what you're doing isn't expensive to do if you do it domestically first. You don't have to fly to Brazil first. You can do a lot of it just around this country. This country is really diverse and you can just hop in a car and do a lot of this and it kind of establish your persona online and establish the way you collaborate with people. And then you'll start to get more and more people that are viewing it. And then you can afford to fly to all these other places too.
Andy, I got one other one for you.
Yeah.
I would DM Delta, Amtrak, JetBlue, everybody who, you know, Uber, Lyft. I would reach out to transportation companies and say, hey, yeah, I'll make you the official sponsor of my world. So you did Kickstarter. I'm gonna presume that you don't have enough money to travel every day, every way you want to. I would reach out to the Starwood Group, like all these different people who can brands are always looking for unique content, so they can subsidize your overhead. And so now all you're doing is just, it's your time, right? Because you've got your transportation paid for. That would be a very compelling DM, reaching out, email.
Actual car company.
Avis too, or a car that you can drive. That's, to John's point, there's probably 40 to 100 companies that you should be reaching out to, or you could start a hitchhiking concept. Like, you need to figure out how to take care of your overhead, and then you could really just rely on the collaborations, and then you're 1 minute away from the right person, whether real A-list celebrity or social celebrity with big audience, seeing your stuff, being like, holy crap, that's dope, hitting you up, collaboration. Kodak Black does it because he just loved your stuff, and your whole world changes.
Awesome, man. I thank you guys so much, Gary. I love everything you do, and it's been a real inspiration.
Thank you, my
John
man.
John Legend, you're the man, dude. Keep up.
Take care, man. Play that banjo.
Work, man.
John Legend, you are the man. So, John, while Andy's pulling up another one, talk to me about your real life, not John Legend, John Legend's social media behavior. Do you, as a human, not as the celebrity, do you wake up like everybody else and go to the bathroom and look through your Instagram? Are you hot on Facebook? Like, how do you roll on?
I'm mostly Instagram and Twitter. I do Snap some, but I'm not huge on Snap for some reason. It's just not,
Come natural to you.
It doesn't come naturally to me.
Do you engage with fans?
Yes, I do.
You do?
I write back fans, especially on Twitter. Yeah. And sometimes I'll comment back and forth with them on Instagram as well, but most likely interaction I'll have with someone is on Twitter. And I'm very into politics, as anybody that follows me knows. Yeah. So a lot of what I tweet about or talk about on Twitter is related to what's going on in the country or around the world when it comes to politics.
Have you replied to people in the Instagram comments? I've noticed celebrities.
Yes. Yeah,
I think that's a real fun one.
Yeah. They,
you know, cool, awesome. Got one?
Yeah.
I love that. Look, I got it, sorry. Now, what, are you ready? I thought you were ready. Who is it?
Jemai.
Well, who's, who?
Jemai.
Jemai?
He's got a question.
Okay. I want to get a tweet back from John Legend.
Hey, yo, Gary.
I will. Uh-oh, Jemai.
Hello?
Jemai?
Yes.
This is Gary Vaynerchuk, and you're on the Ask Gary V Show with John Legend.
What's up, Jemai?
Oh, man. That's what's up, man. My name is Jemai. I'm an R&B singer. Uh-huh. I grew up on John Legend in high school.
It always freaks me out when people say they grew up on me.
Oh, you're old now. Jemai, where are you from?
I'm from Philly.
All right, so you grew up on John Legend, so this is surreal and exciting for you, right?
I went to college there.
Yeah, it's real and exciting. I'm a singer. I'm an R&B singer from Philly. My Instagram is Jemai, J-A-M-A-I Music. My question is, I've been working on... my issue has been creating and not documenting. So I recently, as of like the last couple of days, just worked on like doing Instagram and YouTube covers, like posting them on a regular just so that people can have new content to come to my page. But my question is, I'm trying to get into the college market as an artist, and I'm a black guy, an R&B artist, but I also do pop. So it's a little struggle for me. Since I've traveled overseas and performed, it's a struggle for me to be identified as, some people want to put me in a category of just an R&B, like a John Legend, but I'm really more so of like a Jason Derulo, Chris Brown. I can do both equally. So what I recently started doing was I watched episode 139, we talked about DMing people, and I basically have been going to every student government college, you know, every student government president, and basically DMing them about,
yes,
like, you know, events that they have coming and things like that.
And how's that going?
Of course, not really well. I know you said maybe 1 out of 900, so I'm trying to be consistent with it. But my question is, I have two questions. My first question is, because I am naturally a versatile artist, I'm naturally R&B, I'm naturally pop, do I need to... just be an R&B artist for now so that people can kind of categorize me and be more familiar with me? Or should I be who I am and be the international pop R&B EDM artist that I am? And my other question...
Hold on, let's get John to answer that one and then we'll go to the second one.
Well, I think I think there's already a model out there for the type of artist that you want to be, so I don't feel like there's a limit on you going out there and saying this is who I am. Like, some of our biggest pop stars are people who are black and also make R&B, like Chris Brown, Beyonce, Rihanna. Like, these people are like hugely successful doing exactly what you say you want to do. And so I don't feel like there's any limit on you doing those things, because there's a model out there of successful artists that have done that. So I don't think it's a hard thing for you to convince someone, hey, I can make R&B and pop and dance music. Like you said, there's Jason, there's Chris, there's Beyonce, there's Rihanna. All these people make kind of those hybrids of music. And so I don't think there's anything holding you back in people's perception of what black artists can do.
The thing about that is, I'm gonna cut you off, but I feel like on an independent artist level, like, it's easier to look at Beyonce, Chris, a lot of those more versatile artists, but on an independent level, most R&B, or most black artists are just like soul. Like, they don't.
Sure, but you also have to understand that what those artists have access to when it comes to production and songwriters,
right,
is a little bit different. So these people are working with the biggest pop producers on earth. They're working with the biggest pop songwriters on earth. And so it's a whole enterprise that goes into making the music they make. And so you may not be able to make all of that music on your own. So you might want to find an alliance with a producer that can help you do that. My alliance was with Kanye West when we were both not famous.
That was a good idea.
That was a pretty good idea. But a lot of those types of artists that you're talking about are very producer driven, and so if you are also a producer, that's amazing. But if you're not, you might want to collaborate with someone that can help you do that.
And Jemiah, just listen, and this is coming from the deep, deep part of my heart. You're in excuse mode right now, my man. Like you're looking for the angle to why not. Nothing you said isn't feasible and isn't happening. You're coming up with the reason it's not happening instead of just focusing on the things you need to do to make it happen. You excited the crap out of me when you said you've been DMing, schools and college people that are producing the events. Now my question is, of course you can say anything.
I think you misunderstood my. Basically, what I'm saying is, I have music, I have the production. But as far as the market is concerned for independent artists, the venues and things like that, when I bring my dancers with me, I already have that. I have dancers. I have all those different things. I have the music, the product. But when I go, it's the audiences are not accepting. And I am really good, but the audiences are because of my look, it's too far to the left. Or, I might wear a fucking latex costume.
I think you have to get the audience before they see you at the show. Because if you are creating these recordings and you're publishing them somehow online, you're gonna start to develop a fan base if people like you. And then that way, when people come see your show, they've already listened to the songs a few times. They've already bought into who you are as a persona and the way you dress and all those things, because they've seen it on your Instagram. They've seen it on your Instagram page. So you can't just cold call all of these producers and say, come let me perform at your show, when no one at the school knows my music yet. You wanna get your music out there so that when you show up, you've already got a base. You've already got people that are like, oh, I've followed this person for a year and I really like them. And I know some of the words to some of his songs. And
Gary,
I connect with them.
What is the pickup for the eighth? Because that's where I'm trying to get into. I'm trying to get into the market, but I don't have the following necessarily.
Well, that's because you're Jemiah, my man, you're blaming the market. Right? You're like, they're not seeing it, they're not feeling it, I'm too far to the left. Any artist that blames the audience already lost.
Yeah,
I think John, I'll tell you this. You need to put out more music on SoundCloud. You should put out how much music do you have? How many songs you got?
That goes into my second question. I have music on iTunes. I got a few mixtapes, and I've been doing often. I do covers, official covers.
Yep.
But my question was about the songs. Was I have one song that I truly believe in, wholeheartedly, and I just feel because I'm so versatile, should I push the one song or should I have multiple songs that I push?
You saw the piece of content where I was hanging out with Kyle. Did you see that?
No, I didn't see that.
All right, I'm going to link it in this episode. You need to watch it. You need to put out music, man. The big advantage now of distribution online is you need at-bats. Don't fall in love with that song. You may love it. The world may hate it. You need to put out music. Okay. You need to put out music.
Put it out, man. And if people love it, it'll start to generate some buzz. People will listen to it. They'll share it with their friends. And you'll start more views.
What if I don't have the money to put out music as often as I would like to, quality sounding music?
Then you're stuck and you lost like everybody else. You need to figure it out. Prince was a janitor in his studio, and the quality now?
It's so cheap to make music now. The money should not be a problem.
Jemiah, listen, man.
It's really cheap to make music.
I love you, and I'm trying to be kind because John's here. Everything you're saying is backwards. You need to do and work. You're coming up with all the wrong angles, in my opinion, and I'm so pumped you called because I'm hoping that this is the breakthrough moment. Like, you need to so far I heard it's the audience's fault, it's too far to the left, the music's too expensive. You are fully in excuse mode. You can put out plenty of quality music, to John's point, it's inexpensive. And if you want it so bad, go fucking work at the studio in exchange for studio time. Like, you need to go out and put out music, put in the work, put your head down, and then figure it out after the fact. You need to put out 150 fucking songs and see how people react to it before we hear another phone call from you.
Bet. Got you.
Let's do it.
Thank you.
I believe in
you. You're welcome.
Do it.
Right? I mean, that was a, like, yeah. I love how he ended it. I'm glad he took that punch to the face and said, bet. That's what I was hoping he would say. But like, right, that's what a lot of people do. They're like looking for like, why not? Like, the audience doesn't, like, it's the audience's fault? You mean the market?
Yeah.
The market decides.
Yeah, the market decides, and you have to create something that you believe in, but ultimately, people are gonna decide whether or not they like it, and you can't blame them for not liking it. If they don't like it, they don't like it.
Zach?
Yep.
That's right, that's just the way it is.
There are ways to market things to make people like it more.
Of course.
But the content matters.
Hello, this is Zach.
Zach, it's Gary Vee. You're on the Ask Gary Vee show with John Legend.
Oh my goodness, Gary Vee, how are you doing, sir?
Tremendous, my friend. Where are you from?
I am from, actually, I live in New York City, but I'm in Denver right now.
I love it. Say hello to John Legend.
Mr. Legend, how are you doing, sir?
I'm doing great, how are you?
Mr. Legend.
Mr. Legend.
Hey Gary, by the way, I emailed you this morning. I sent you my media analytics platform, but nevertheless.
I love it, man. Well, I haven't gotten to my email. I'll check it out later. Go ahead.
Awesome. Okay, so my question is about expectations. You said you had zero expectations, which allows you to essentially, you know, live life a little bit more freely.
Let's clarify it. I have zero expectations of others because I deploy empathy that they have their own shit going on and their own thing. And so I don't put myself in a position where people let me down because I deploy enormous amounts of empathy to understand they have other variables going on for them.
Gotcha. Okay. So
I have huge expectations of myself, right? I like have enormous expectations of myself.
What about your employees?
I'm empathetic. Like, of course I pay them and I expect them, but like if they don't work as hard, like my friends are like, my employees don't work as hard as me. I'm like, give them a piece of the business. Like, I'm empathetic to what the trade is.
Yeah.
And some of them grossly underperform what they get paid. Others grossly overperform. I'm trying to make sure I'm closing the gap on who's overperforming. I'm trying to move up people that are underperforming, but I'm realistic about it. I don't get emotional. Everybody's putting so much on the other person. I worry about what I can do.
Yeah.
Go ahead, my
Absolutely.
Man.
Absolutely. My next question would be is, I know like with when you have very high standards, like I have extremely high standards for myself, and so sometimes when I'm underperforming, it stifles my creativity. How do you go about like essentially combining the two or not letting it stifle your creativity?
So for me, I don't judge myself. I'm worried about the pre-effort, not necessarily the result. I feel unbelievably satisfied with myself because I know I'm giving it my all, and just that is what I'm judging myself on, my effort and my tenacity and where my intent is coming from, not necessarily the results that manifested in the short term from those actions.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
John?
And I think the standard.
What about you, John?
I think the standard should be, did you put everything into it to make sure it was successful? And if you can feel confident that you did that, then you should feel good about yourself.
John, in a world where the world gets to judge your stuff, like I'm kind of like doing my thing, but in a world where maybe you fell in love with a song, like, mm-hmm. or an album that maybe underperformed, is that difficult? Or are you able to say, wow, I really gave it my all, it sucks that this underperformed, or this song's not doing well, or even this album's not doing well? How does that play out for you?
Yeah, you have feelings of doubt, especially at this point in my career, because, you know, I'm almost 40, and most hugely successful pop stars kind of peak in their, you know, late 20s through mid 30s. And so you always wonder, like, are people just gonna get tired of you after a while?
But you had your biggest song ever, what, 3 or 4 years ago? Like, yeah. Three, what is it? So, do you
13?
Do you 14. Feel a lot of pressure? Did you feel pressure when the album came out in December to have a song of that nature, or did you realize that was a unicorn?
That was a unicorn. I didn't expect any song to be as big as All of Me. I didn't expect All of Me to be as big as All of Me, and I don't expect a song after that.
Do you expect to never have a, like, how do you, I mean, I'm actually curious right now.
I literally had one of the biggest songs in the world that year, and it's nearly impossible to do that multiple times. There's only a few artists that do that.
But what's your gut tell you? Do you think you got another one in you?
I believe I'm gonna keep writing songs for at least 20 more years, and I'll have some more really great songs. But again, who knows if they'll ever be as big as All of Me. Like, it's hard to be the biggest song in the world.
You know what's crazy about, and you know what's crazy about All of Me? Is like, I don't know, every goddamn wedding for the rest of time is gonna have a good chance of having that song somewhere in that playlist. Yeah.
And like, Love Me
like,
Now.
Like, Dunk's gonna dance to that at
Love
his wedding.
Love Me Now from this album did very well. And it according, did? Like pre All of Me standards, it was like one of my biggest songs.
Hits.
Yeah, but compared to All of Me, it's like, wow, it didn't do as well.
Man, let me give you a good piece of advice. For the people that work for you, for the people you work for yourself, judgment is dangerous. You need to be reactionary. Too many people paint pictures to themselves that they can't live up to. And I think accepting yourself is extremely important while pushing yourself. And they're obviously opposite energies, but it's important to find that balance, because if you go one way or the other, you're gonna fall off kilter.
Beautiful.
All right, my man. Thank you.
Thank you. Take care, guys.
Take care.
Take care.
John, thanks for being on the show, man.
Of course.
This was fun,
pleasure.
Right?
I had a great time.
John, you get to ask the question of the day. Any question you want. Thousands of comments on Facebook and YouTube to give insight. Anything you're curious about at a macro, at a micro. Any question of the day, but the guest gets to ask it. Fire away.
I'm asking you?
Nope. The universe.
Oh, asking the universe.
You get to ask them any question you want. I like this. I'm glad to see that you've been watching the 250 episodes of the Ask Gary Vee Show. All right, you get to ask them any question you want, macro question. It's a good consumer insight thing if you want to know where trends are going or things of that nature. What are people into, like artists, technology, or trends? Or
how many concerts do you go to in a year?
Dunk?
Probably two.
Suze?
No, three, four.
Two.
Four.
Tyler?
I don't know, like 10?
I mean, this is the most I've ever gone, like three.
D-Rock. Thank you.
Like
Jake?
40 or 50.
You go to 40 or 50 concerts a year?
Yeah.
You're our favorite consumer here.
It's hardcore. Yeah. Who do you see the most?
Fish.
Oh, so you're
one of those.
Like a deadhead like fish person.
Of course. Yeah. That's what I knew that it had to be something like that.
Jam vibe.
Yeah, five.
Yes.
Five. I may go to zero. I'm very weird with concerts. I'll go to one.
I used to go like two or three, honestly.
Yeah.
That aren't my own.
We went to yours in Brooklyn. That was so much fun. That was a great night. John, thank you, man.
Thank you.
Yeah. You keep asking questions, we'll keep answering them.